We are swamped with goober Republicans filing to run for president today in the Granite State. Welcome to the Party Line Podcast. My name is Colin Booth, Communications Director at the NHDP, and I'm here with your host, New Hampshire Democratic Party Chair, Ray Buckley.
Well, hello, Granite Staters, and welcome to another episode of the Party Line Podcast, hosted by yours truly, me. Well, before we get going, I want to ask Colin, what is a goober Republican?
They're all goobers. They're all freaking goobers.
What's a goober?
You know, it's a dork.
Okay.
It's a loser.
All right. Well, we definitely do not have a goober as our special guest, because this week we have an amazing, amazing person, a leader here in the state, former state senator and Dr. Tom Sherman, who ran a valiant campaign against that good-for-nothing governor in the 2022 election cycle. We're going to be talking about his experience in New Hampshire politics and his plans for the future.
Can't wait for that. Tom, love that guy, Dr. Sherman. God bless him. But first, updates from the NHDP. Chairman, can you tell us a little about what's happening at the party?
Absolutely. First of all, make sure you go onto the nhdp.org website and check our calendar. There's endless events that are happening. So mark your calendars, though. This year's 2023 NHDP Eleanor Roosevelt Dinner will be held on Friday, December 1st. Join us as we celebrate Democrats across the state as we march to majorities in 2024. It is going to be an amazing evening.
Fancy. Fancy
and,
dinner.
The Belknap County Dems on November 1st will be hosting Let's Get the Party Started on Wednesday, November 1st, 6 p.m. at the Tower Hill Tavern in Weirs Beach. Have not been there. They're going to kick off the countdown to the 2024 election in Belknap County with live music, food, and fun while honoring Laconia Mayor Andrew Hosmer. Let me say that again. Unopposed Laconia Mayor Andrew Hosmer in recognition of his dedication to Belknap County. Also that night, Manchester City Democrats are doing their countdown to victory dinner at 5 o'clock at the Alpine Club. Tickets are going hot, so you might want to check that out. Kevin Kavanaugh is running for mayor in Manchester, as we got great candidates running across the state. But we need every Democrat who can make it. It's a top-notch, difficult race, and we need to get the word out to all Democrats to get out to vote for Kevin on November 7th. We got a few weeks before the municipal races across the cities, but we need Democrats across the state out there in voting in these elections. So mark your calendars, November 7th. If you don't live in a city, please sign up to help with the GOTV. And Hollis and Brookline Dems will be meeting on Tuesday, October 24th at 6:30 at the Lawrence Barn in Hollis for a conversation on supporting education. So email political at nhdp.org for more information on how to get involved in all of these events and more.
That sounds amazing. So much going on. It's really hard to imagine anybody having a night off in this kind of climate.
Somebody said had a good weekend this morning when I left a meeting, and I said, weekend? What is
that?
Weekend?
What's that? The week is ending? Doesn't sound like it for me. all right. But well, now political news in the Granite State and beyond. Today, it looks like disgraced former President Donald Trump is going to be filing his name on the first in the nation primary ballot right here in Concord. Trump is, of course, leading the Republican race here in New Hampshire, despite having spent almost no time here, besides a few little events here and there. My understanding is that the State House grounds are going to be largely locked down for this visit. I know reporters are worried about being able to cover it, so not really sure how this is going to play out. But Chairman, I was wondering, do you remember the first time Donald Trump filed for the first in the nation primary? And if you do, you know, how was that different from that first experience?
Well, this will be the third time that he's filed.
Ah, yes.
And I don't remember a single thing about it. I have zero memory.
As you should.
I honestly have no idea. I think Pence might have filed him 4 years ago.
Ah, interesting.
That's often something that happened.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, I was probably rolling on the floor thinking, what a joke.
Yeah.
This time, well, I'm still rolling on the floor, what a joke, but how painful it is that 40% of the country think that he's their
after all the lawsuits, the crime, after everything.
It really, I was talking to somebody about it just a little while ago. We're talking about the state of politics, and it's like, the problem is those of us with some sense of reality can't process how somebody else, how the others believe him and believe in him. And and you see these interviews and they are so righteous about their affection and admiration for this friggin' scumball.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, especially after January 6th, you know, when you have all this preponderance of evidence and, you know, the evidence of your eyes that he orchestrated an attack on the U.S. Capitol and tried to overthrow in an election. You know, first time in American history that we've failed to, you know, have a peaceful transfer of power.
Yeah. They don't care.
Seems weird.
Very weird.
Not be into that, but sure. Moving on. You know, last week we watched in horror as Republicans continued to fail to elect a new Speaker of the House, with MAGA extremist and January 6th plotter Jim Jordan seemingly not giving up his efforts despite losing multiple rounds to his Republican colleagues. This comes, of course, after Republican Congressman Steve Scalise also failed to get the speakership. You know, throughout this process, Republicans have somehow contorted their brains enough to somehow blame Republicans for Republican candidates failing to get enough votes from their own caucus. Chairman, do you think Democrats are to blame for Republicans not being able to agree on their own leader? And who do you think is going to win? And would you be willing to step up and run for the seat if they can't figure this out? I think you might be a good fit.
First off, let's all be thankful for Chris Pappas and Annie Custer.
Absolutely.
The fact that throughout this painful process, this entire term, here we've got two level-headed, calm, mature, respected individuals representing the same language. We don't have to apologize for a damn thing. And can you imagine if Caroline with a K and Burns are serving down there? They would be right in the midst of the chaos.
Oh, yeah.
It just friggin' disgusting.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, Democrats are absolutely not to blame. And, you know, as long as the Republicans refuse to even consider leveling the rules for a level playing field on how to operate the U.S. House, they need to get their crap together.
Isn't it insane? I mean, it's like the idea that Democrats should be, it's like blaming Democrats for not voting for a Republican piece of legislation. Like, why would we do that? It's absurd.
Well, and for your final point, there are offices that I would not want to be mayor of Manchester. I would not want to be governor of New Hampshire. I would not want to be president of the United States. I think all three of them are thankless jobs. That all they do is get, no matter how great you are, how good you do a job, you're going to get kicked in the head. But I, honest to God, have full confidence that I would indeed be an excellent speaker of the United States House.
I think so too. I think I think you might have some trouble getting support from the Republican side, but, you know, move a couple.
I'm willing to cut deals.
I bet you are.
I need what? 10 of them?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you could do that.
You see that speaker's balcony? That's yours.
You know, I think 45 minutes in the Puritan, you can get 15 votes.
Yeah. Well, enough mudslides will get people to do anything. Oh, Lord. I have to keep down to half a mudslide. I can't even do a whole one. Crazy.
That's funny. All right. Well, moving on.
Gosh.
Moving on. You know, this week, last week, we saw reporting out of the North Country that theater company Up Theater is being forced out of their space in the Littleton Opera House after homophobic members of the Littleton Select Board, including Republican State Senator Kerry Gendro, complained about a play they were putting on that had LGBTQ+ themes at the theater. This, of course, comes after Senator Gendro attacked a Pride mural recently on private property in the town at a Select Board meeting that was well documented, that was on tape, making some incredibly homophobic remarks in the process, and floating a possible public art ban in response in the town. Chairman, what is the thinking of these Republican elected officials, not only attacking their own constituents, but now shuttering businesses to keep up this war on gay people in New Hampshire?
It's sick. First off, I grew up in local theater and was part of two different companies. And it was my lifeline as a young teen. When I wasn't doing politics, I was involved in theater either on stage or behind the stage. And what that gives young people, what it gives other members of the community to be part of such a phenomenal experience and to have Carrie go after that is just sick. And I understand, it's conservative, but there's conservative and there's just downright horrible. And she is just being horrible. There has been a long time now. I know it was real when I was a teenager, where young people just couldn't deal with accepting who they were and committed suicide. I had a friend that did that when I was in high school. And that continues. Just last week in Manchester, there was a young person that committed suicide who was trans and was having great difficulty. This sort of outrageous behavior by Carrie Gendreau does not help as we try to make sure that everybody feels welcome in New Hampshire, everyone feels respected, and everybody feels that they can be part of what makes New Hampshire so great. For Carrie to be involved in this stuff, it takes a really, really distorted sense of self.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really, I just have such a hard time believing that Republicans, when they ever talk about issues surrounding mental health, that is something they even believe in. Because
this as you're talking, my blood is just boiling. I want to talk to some of the folks up there. I think we should create a PAC. And while we might not have a candidate against Carrie, every time she does crap like this, we should all, throw in another $50.
Absolutely.
And maybe that will wake her up. Now, I did a similar thing when Dan Innes was in the Senate and Tom Sherman was running against him. Dan Innes and his then husband, traded him in for a younger version.
Yeah.
Were just outrageous on Twitter. And so I kept telling the two of them, every time you're nasty, I'm going to donate to Tom Sherman. And I did. And he whooped him. Yeah. So there you go.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's really disgusting. And she's clearly doing this with total impunity. She's got the support of her select board slugs filing in right behind her. And I know that they're worried about, the North Country becoming gay. Just all these like disgusting, totally unfounded fears. And it really is just incredibly out of step with, I think, where Granite Staters are. And it's just, they need to pay a cost for this kind of incredibly dangerous rhetoric.
Just like Dan Innes did against Tom Sherman.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, up next, our interview with Senator Dr. Tom Sherman. Hey, today we are joined by an amazing leader in New Hampshire politics. Well, leader in New Hampshire, Dr. Tom Sherman, with an amazing medical background as a gastroenterologist. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did.
Holy crap, my mother would be so proud. Tom transitioned into the political arena, serving as a state representative and later as a two-term state senator representing the Seacoast area. But not stopping there, he took on Chris Sununu in 2022 as our Democratic nominee for governor, and not only campaigned passionately on healthcare reforms and other major issues, he, I believe, wiped the floor of Chris Sununu in the debates. Now, if we could have only forced every damn voter in New Hampshire to have watched the debate, we would be having Governor Sherman right here. So he's just a well-respected figure in the realm of healthcare policy and advocating for state-level implementations of Affordable Care Act and working tirelessly towards expanding Medicare under New Hampshire Healthcare Protection Program. Dr. Tom Sherman, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Well, you know, your journey from being a medical practitioner to a legislator is quite unique. Can you share with us what motivated this transition and how your medical background influenced your political advocacy, especially in healthcare policy?
Sure. Well, it goes way back to when I was a kid. My parents were deeply passionate about politics. And in fact, I still remember from the early 1960s actually hearing Lyndon Johnson speak in Houston. But as I went through my medical career, I realized how much of healthcare is actually dependent on both state and federal policy. And I think we are getting an even better understanding of that sort of globally in the public health policy arena. But when in 2011, I, along with my partner, uncovered a scheme, a criminal scheme, to infect and actually to divert opioids and actually infect multiple people, not just in New Hampshire, but across the country, we were able to turn that into four bills. And that involvement in how you can make people from a micro setting of my office to a macro setting of the entire state, making the state safer by enacting legislation, really cemented this idea of the capacity of working as a state rep or a state senator or in the state government can have an impact on the health of the people of New Hampshire.
Well, you know, during your time in the state Senate, you were more than just a prominent advocate. You were the expert for healthcare reforms. Talk a little bit about some of the key healthcare legislation that you did work on, as you just mentioned, and the impact they've had on folks here in New Hampshire.
Well, prior to the state Senate, in the House, we were able to get some really important pieces of legislation through. Expanding Medicaid was really a transformational event, I think, both for me personally and as a politician, and also the state as well. And all of these issues, all of these efforts are collaborative. It's not one person actually causing it. But one person can make a big difference. And so working with people like Senator Rosenwald and others, we were able to get expanded Medicaid. We also created a ban on tanning beds for minors, which was another one. You might think that's not a big deal, but it's huge on in the impact of public health. We were able to pass the four pieces of legislation that made us one of the safest states in terms of diversion of drugs, prescribed drugs, especially opioids. And then as a state senator, the work that we did on emergency room boarding of the mentally ill, protecting children who suffer from mental health crisis, and so many other bills. One of the ones that I'm still involved in, which is critical for the people of New Hampshire, is creating the Prescription Drug Affordability Board. This was heavily supported by New Futures, the AARP, and we are now starting to get into the real substance of our work. And in fact, we're interviewing people to be for the role of executive director. And once that's in place, we'll be able to start bringing together the data to help figure out ways that we can decrease the cost of prescription drugs for state employees and also for people across the state.
Let's delve into your speaking out on the substance abuse treatment and your time supporting the legalization of medical marijuana. Talk about how those efforts how important they are to you.
Well, medical marijuana was a critical point. It was completely bipartisan. We did it the New Hampshire way. We started with a very restricted program and expanded it as we saw that, one, it was safe, two, it did not have any fraud associated with it, We had a great mechanism for monitoring it. And so as we've expanded it, what we've seen is that it has really helped a huge number of people across the state. In my own practice, I was able to certify people as being eligible for the program, and every single one of them was able to come off of opioids for pain management, which I thought was an incredible success.
So both in the House and in the Senate, you were able to serve in the minority and the majority. Which is better?
Majority.
What's the difference?
Well, there's a few differences. One, you have to lead differently in the minority. You almost have to be a stealth leader, one who is willing not to take credit, but to share the credit across the aisle, even if you are the one doing the vast majority of the work. And that's the way you build those coalitions. You find that during my campaign for governor, I used to call that tiny thread of common ground that allows you to move forward with an initiative and find your allies on both sides of the aisle, build that coalition, and then get the legislation through. But one of the things that I was really pleased with was that the really important issues, except for one, we were able to get them all through, whether it was the majority of the or the minority. And I just learned that hopefully that one will be addressed, which is really working towards having early childhood education in the state of New Hampshire be available for everyone.
So, you know, serving in a 400-member House is quite the experience. And it doesn't have to be a piece of legislation, but what was like your favorite day in the House, not in the Senate, but in the House?
One of my favorite moments in the House was on the discussion of Medicaid expansion. And it was kind of funny because I was up in the well having given a speech on the importance of expanding Medicaid, using a patient and a physician's perspective of how this would help patient care. And Bill O'Brien came up to ask a question, and he said, well, isn't it a conflict of interest that Representative Sherman is up here trying to...
How can you quote him without making fun of the way he talks? I've never been able to... I've always...
Yeah, well, what was intelligible about his question was he thought it was a conflict of interest that we would be expanding Medicaid, and I reminded him that we had among the lowest Medicaid reimbursement in the country, and that actually expanding Medicaid, I'd still be losing money per patient in my practice. And that got a huge roar of laughter from the body. But it was also true, and I enjoyed that. The most amazing day was the day we passed Medicaid expansion through both chambers, and the governor, Maggie Hassan, invited me up to their offices to celebrate with her staff, which was, it was something I'd never experienced. It really taught me how much we can accomplish when we're all working together on something that's great for the people of New Hampshire.
Okay, now the Senate. What was your favorite day in the Senate? And now you got robbed of a good portion of that because of COVID.
Right.
But
probably one of the, well, the repeal of the death penalty was a day that I will never forget, and being able to hug Rennie Cushing and say what an incredible job he did to get that through. But in terms of continuity and just feeling really good, it was a day when we were able to vote unanimously to make the red-tailed hawk the state raptor. And what was so important to me about that was the lesson. Not only that those at one time fourth graders, when they were subject to the derision of the Republican majority House, when they rejected that bill and actually basically attacked the fourth graders, when they came back this time, it made it through the House, it made it through the Senate unanimously. And those fourth graders were now eighth graders graduating from their school at Lincoln Ackerman in Hampton Falls. And you could tell that the impact on those kids of this process would be lifelong. No better civics lesson. But what was really important to me was the impact on the legislators. Those kids had taught all of us one of the most important lessons of my legislative career, which is one, dignity and respect, and two, never give up.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great story. Now let's talk about your favorite experience in the governor's race.
Oh, it was so great. I met so many wonderful people. I tell you,
what part of the state did you get to experience that you just, you knew it was there, but you never actually was part of it, and you were just your mind was blown, going, "Well, this is just an amazing secret."
The most incredible. Well, I mean, there's places around Lebanon that blew me away. I remember pulling into one stop for a speech, and I pulled up, and there's a beach, and then there's a lake, and then there's this layer of fog, and then there's the fall colors, and then there's a mountain in the distance. And I figured if I died right at that moment, I'd be a happy man. But the most incredible experience was meeting so many amazing people. One of the things that I've said since I was a state rep is you knock on a door and you never know what you're going to get on the other side. And there are people who are living in humble means, small house, doing gigantically wonderful work for the state of and people of New Hampshire. And that's what really blew me away. It was not the physical beauty of New Hampshire, but the personal beauty of so many of the people of the Granite State. One of the other experiences that was really, really fun, and this is so nerdy, I can almost not tell it, but New Hampshire has, I believe, if not the largest, one of the largest specialty wire factories in the world.
Where is that?
It's outside Littleton. And wonderful CEO.
What does that mean?
Well, I'll tell you. These are wires that are made for all different. They're huge, they're tiny, and they're made basically custom. Almost every wire is contracted for. They're a vendor for many different types of companies. But in my professional career, I use wires to get up into people's bile ducts. And these are tiny little floppy wires, stiff wires. In any case, so I'm getting this tour, and I know this, I told you this was nerdy. I'm getting this tour, and the CEO and I are just really going at it with these great discussion about how you create a taper tip floppy wire to get up into a bile duct that's so tiny. It's called a 543, and they make them. And he was so appreciative to have somebody to talk to who actually was into wires. But for the state, it's actually one of our best employers.
Where did they come from?
I mean, they've been there forever. They've been there forever.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. And
I've heard of the longest candy display in Littleton and then the great bookstore. I had not heard about the wire factory.
You have to be a wire guy.
And I'm more of a candy guy, I guess.
Well, you are a little wired. But that's a dad joke, sorry. But it was an incredible experience. But there were lots of those. You know, the other part that was really fun was going to so many microbreweries across the state, and watching that industry flourish in the state is not only fun and should be encouraged.
What was the best one? Not in the character, but like when you took a sip of that beer from that particular microbrewery, you're like, whoa, this is great.
Well, one of the really good ones, there were so many good ones. But one of my favorite was just the mojo and the vibe of, it's the one in Manchester, where I'm blanking on the
name.
You're
talking about Touchere?
Touchere.
Oh, really?
I love Touchere. Why Not, which is in Hampton. There's just so many great, great ones. There's I had a wonderful discussion with the brothers who run Schilling Brewery. They're all Republicans. Mm-hmm. But we had a wonderful discussion and learned a lot. In Gorham, we had a great event at their new brewery. All over the place. And it's fun to see because the people who are running these are so passionate about them, and they are so expert at what they produce.
Okay. I'm going to ask the question that's been rolling around in my head. How did you control yourself debating Kristen Inna? I'm not sure I could have. I would sit there and watch you. I was always there physically, and you were able to just set him aside and focus on what your message was. He just would have distracted me.
Well, I thought the union leader got it right when they called him a golden retriever. I've had a couple of golden retrievers, so yeah. I felt well prepared. I learned many, many years ago that I don't do well when I lose my temper or lose my cool, and it doesn't help the situation at all. And I think creating a contrast between somebody who was talking all the time but saying virtually nothing.
With great enthusiasm.
With great enthusiasm. And a lot of it wasn't true. You know, in fact, most of it wasn't true. But one of my favorites is where he said we were rated as the freest state in the country. Well, the guy who said that was the founder of the free state movement in a journal publication. And so, you know, it's not like there's some study that he's using. He's just quoting everybody. And I think the other part that I really felt vindicated by, and you know, those were very difficult. But I knew I would lose if I lost my cool, because I think what people hopefully were looking for is a dignified governor who understands the issues and can actually bring the change where change needs to occur and not change things that are working in the state. And I think that's what I conveyed in those debates. But one of the parts that I found really humorous was that from debate to debate, when I would make a point using real facts, the next debate, the governor would adopt my standpoint. And probably one of the most remarkable was when he started being pro-choice again by the end of six debates and blaming others, which is his way of doing things, for his own mistakes and shortcomings, and then taking credit for work that he didn't do. And the fact that he didn't invite me to the bill signing in Berlin of the Made in America bill, which was my bill, just goes to show that he really is all about taking credit for work that other people have done.
So you did something remarkable in the sense that you already knew that you were in for a tough job. Colin Van Osten was not able to defeat Kristen Inna, and Molly Kelly wasn't, and Dan Feltes wasn't. But you decided to step forward. It wasn't that you stepped forward, which a lot of other people were just like, nah, I'm going to wait. You cleared the field and didn't have a primary. I just don't remember a time where a non-incumbent candidate on the Democratic side didn't have a tough primary.
Well, I like to joke that I achieved four out of my five goals. And one of my goals was to not have a primary. In retrospect, honestly, I should have started much earlier and said, I don't care if I have a primary. But I didn't think that was in the best interests of the party or the actual race. What I had seen in prior races, one of the reasons I didn't want a primary is because our primary is so late. I wanted to lift up all of the down ballot races as I campaigned, whether it's executive, council, Senate, House, or even county commissioner races. And we always made sure, as much as we possibly could, that they were all included in our events, in our campaign stops, that they were given a shout out, and sometimes they were allowed to speak. I tried to help with their fundraising, because one of the things that I felt really strongly about is that I knew I had a long shot, but I was playing to win. I didn't want to leave anything on the table. I didn't want to leave any stone unturned. And I don't think I did. I'm very happy with how I did. We were able to cut his margin by over 16 points, which is big. But more importantly, I wanted us to get back the House and the Senate and the Executive Council. And that was the other part. We needed one thing that a lot of people didn't understand is that whether or not Sununu could be beaten, if we didn't have somebody who was a cheerleader running for governor, we were not going to do well down ballot. And we had seen that with Sununu's coattails in 2020. And that's nothing against Dan, who's a good friend. It's really Dan had the impact of COVID.
No incumbent governor in the country was defeated in 20.
Right. So it's really, but we did see the impact of those coattails. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe Sununu had any coattails in 2022. That was a combination of him making some really boneheaded endorsements of the Republican nominees to federal office. But it also, I hope and I believe that we were able to keep him in check as a result of the work we did, the ads we did, and the debates.
So, last question. What next?
I am enjoying for the first time, how many campaigns have I done in a row? 6 campaigns in a row. And Maggie Hassan, when she won her federal Senate race, she said, oh my gosh, I've got 6 years. And I don't know what will happen politically next, but I do know I'm really enjoying, number one, the time with my family. Number two, the ability to be there for my for the Seacoast. I'm now on the board of Seacoast Mental Health Center. I'm on the board of Healthcare Workers for Climate Action, which I think is leading the way in the country on how a state can respond with their healthcare community to climate issues. And I'm doing a lot of work for as much as I possibly can to help with respite care for the homeless. These are all huge passions of mine, as you know. And, it was never about becoming governor. It was about solving problems. And if I can solve those problems as Joe Citizen, I'm going to do my heart, work my hardest to get that done.
Well, great. And thanks for joining us. Well, we've had Senator Dr. Tom Sherman with us this week.
Thank you so much, Raymond.
Thank you for listening to the Party Line Podcast, brought to you by the New Hampshire Democratic Party.